Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
I'm here in the Hobbit Hole in the beautiful Shire where Betty and I moved after we sold our home. At least that's the story I'm telling now. It's my story and I'm sticking to it. In the Shire, the gentle little hobbits, I have to apologize for saying that they had six toes. They only have five toes, I'm told. But I just didn't want to count their toes. They have, looking at someone's feet, staring at them, counting toes, is just not something I want to do. I think it's rude. And the little hobbits are so gentle and kind. And they eat their mince pies and their slabs of toast and blueberry jelly and jam. Lovely soups. But they're definitely not lamb roasters. I haven't seen a head of garlic since we moved to the Shire. Which brings me to the business of today. As I sit out here at the Hobbit Hole, there's no lamb being turning on a spit outside. The coronavirus. You can't have a feast of a whole lamb when you only have two people. It just can't be. It'd be wasteful. I suppose I could have roasted a lamb and driven it over to people or donated it to people who need to eat. But it's just too difficult where we are to do that. So there is no lamb. And that's the sad part. The sadness is not being together to celebrate the holiday. And for the Orthodox, this is the holiday, Easter. The Jews have a word for Passover. It's called Pesach. When they sprinkled the blood of lamb on their door to prevent the angel of death from coming and taking their families during the plague that had been sent. For us, Easter is called Pascha. Pesach, Pascha. Get it? Because Jesus, as we believe, went to Jerusalem for the Passover. He was a Jewish rabbi, was crucified, and rose on the third day according to the scriptures. And that's where the lamb comes in, the lamb that binds us, binds both old faiths. There's a new faith, of course. It's called technocracy. You could call it politics and science. I don't care what you call it. It is a new faith, and it offers mitigation of risk. And I'm of the old faith, and I believe that we truly do not live forever. I know it's odd and strange, and I might be denounced as some sort of conservative for saying that, but we don't live forever. We'll talk about all this, about the risk and the lack of it, the new church and the old. As I sit out here on the Hobbit Hole, Jeff Carlin, my friend Jeff, is back at WGN Studio putting this together. And you're out there. Wherever you are, we're all here together on the Chicago Way on WGN Plus.
Look, the Chicago Way is a deep cultural phenomenon.
In a tower by the river, there lived a man. There was a man who took a stand. With pen and paper in his hand, defeating foes in every ward with a pen more mighty than the sword. No escape from his ink lasso. In in a tower by the river. Castle.
Here's how you get him. He pulls a knife, you pull a gun. He sends one of yours to the hospital, you send one of his to the morgue. That's the Chicago way.
I apologize for if I spoke in soft, hushed tones earlier, but I didn't want to wake the hobbits. They sleep late. They're rather lazy people. They eat two breakfasts in the morning. First breakfast and second breakfast. I only have coffee. And I'm sipping it now. As we start the Chicago Way, before we go on, I would like to remind you that you can find us anywhere. iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify. And if there's an opportunity, like on iTunes, to write us a kick-ass review and put 5 stars next to it, I really would appreciate it, and so would Jeff. We don't do this for pay. We don't do it for money. We just do it because we like talking to you. Okay, that public service announcement out of the way. Let's begin. Years ago, when I was covering City Hall for the Chicago Tribune, maybe 25 years ago, there was the editor and publisher of the Tribune. His name was Jack Fuller. He's an amazing man, a Vietnam veteran, a lawyer, Yale Law. He had gone to law school, guess who, with who? Bill and Hillary Clinton, and thought Hillary was smarter. He worked for the Department of Justice. And he testified in Congress several times, including in the terrible takedown of Justice Robert Bork, who he knew as a man of great integrity, a jurist of great competence and artistry. So anyway, Jeff called a bunch of reporters together for a meeting. I was a City Hall writer. Meetings I went to involved aldermen and mayors and politicians talking about how they needed this and how they needed that as they spent us into oblivion. But Jack wanted to have a meeting at the Chicago Tribune, at the editorial board, at the great, large, mahogany table in the beautiful editorial boardroom that we used to have. And he called young reporters there, invited. And there were many who would make their marks in journalism. Dean Baquet, one of my colleagues and a friend then, was a reporter covering City Hall and chasing corruption. And now he's the editor-in-chief of the New York Times. Anne-Marie Lipinski, who together with Baquet won a Pulitzer Prize for their coverage of Chicago City Hall corruption, was an editor. She became the editor of the Chicago Tribune. Bruce Dold, he was then, I think, a member of the editorial board or maybe still a reporter. Bruce Dold was put on the editorial board eventually, received the Pulitzer Prize as well. And he became editor and publisher of the Chicago Tribune. And there were many others who would make their mark in the Wall Street Journal. And it was just an amazing group of young people. And then they had me. And I don't know why they had me there. But they asked me to come, too. He asked me to come. And what he wanted to talk about when we gathered around the table, and I was terrible at meetings, and I wasn't prepared to talk, and I just don't like talking at meetings. What he wanted to talk about was risk I said, risk? He said, yes, risk. Because he said he was afraid that the culture was arranging itself so that it eventually would not be able to handle risk, the taking of risk. And the taking of risk is one of the fundamental truths of America. The pilgrims risked coming to a new land, and the push ever westward was a risk for the pioneers. Isolation, wild beasts, storms, sickness, and Native Americans. So there was risk there too, as they went forward, or westward. And the whole culture was a culture that were risk takers. American culture became a culture that said, yeah, we're going to risk everything because that's what we do. And you tell us we can't go to the moon? Well, guess what? We're going to go. We'll figure out a way. You can tell us that they're, you know, everyone has to, people have to be crippled. Can I even use that term anymore? From polio, when I was a little boy and before I was born, and Chicago was quarantined. The fear of the polio epidemics. And Jonas Salk and Dr. Sabin came up with a vaccine. I remember taking it when I was a kid. It was in a cup. It was like a paper cup of green sweet liquid that we had to drink down at the health clinic when we lived in the back of the yards. And that worked. There's so many things that we've done as a culture, as a country, as a people. And it all involved risk, and it all involved people taking a chance. And then something started happening. What was it? Lawyers? I'm not trying to pick on lawyers, but God, they're so easy to pick on. Maybe centralized bureaucracies. We know now, maybe the education system, and I don't mean teaching primary grades or secondary grades. My wife is a teacher. My son is a teacher. I'm not down on teachers. But I remember that just a few years ago, there was a professor at the University of Missouri, which had up until then a great journalism school, and there was a protest on her campus, and she was screaming, "Get rid of them. Give me some muscle," she said.
"Hi, media. Can I talk to you?"
"No, you need to get out. Well, you need to get out."
"No, I don't."
"You need to get out."
"I actually don't."
"All right. Hey, who wants to help me get this reporter out of here? I need some muscle over here."
She wanted a safe space. Remember that? Safe space? It became ubiquitous. We couldn't ask students questions. They couldn't be challenged. The people that were afraid to be challenged were their parents, and they raised a generation where all kids got a trophy. There was no risk. Nobody lost. Everybody participated. It was conceit. It was the conceit of the fabulously wealthy culture that America was. That everybody won. Nobody lost. Nobody had to deal with loss. Nobody had to deal with pain. Nobody had to deal with risk. And we'd hover over you as children. And then here comes a virus. And the virus drives us inside. And the culture that was a risk-taking culture and that is now a not risk-taking culture hovers inside their homes and shrieks in fear if someone dares suggest maybe it's time to leave. Time to leave the Shire. Time to leave your hobbit hole. Time to stand up and walk out and take a risk. Time to live. Time to reclaim your birthright as a people that were favored with this great country of ours. And they shriek and cry, "No! Don't let me out!" And I'm reminded of the dystopian novels and television shows and films that I liked when I was a little boy, because I had grown up during the duck and cover times when we'd hide under our desks to protect us from a nuclear bomb. Remember duck and cover? Yeah, we'd just hide under our desks and that desk would protect you. The whole thing is bizarre. But the fiction that came out of it was fiction of a new order that generations or centuries after the Holocaust that would happen any minute, that I would, when I was living in it, we thought would happen. And that in the fiction, centuries later, the people lived underground or they lived in isolated communities and they had strict order and strict rules about interacting with each other and preventing risk. And you know what? Usually, invariably, there was some guy from the 20th century, an astronaut or scientist, someone who came from our time, who had been frozen or in deep cryogenic freeze, or maybe it was a time traveler. He would come back, he would go forward into that new riskless society, and they would look at him like a barbarian, as if he were a barbarian, a hairy barbarian. And he would try to tell them, no, you can go out now. You can go out. Yeah, you could die out there, but at least you'll live out there too. All those movies. I think one had Marriott Hartley in it, if I'm not mistaken. I'm just thinking of it right now. And then, of course, THX 1138, one of the first movies, student movies by George Lucas, and later of Star Wars, and there are many of them, and many books written that way. They had survived the Holocaust, the nuclear Holocaust, and they created a society that did not take risks, and it was run by technocrats, and the people had all their faith in technocracy, and it would take an American from the 20th century to wake them up. And they were terrified of this personality. It was an archetype in fiction. This personality was usually male, sometimes had facial hair. This was terrifying to them. And where are we now? Well, I'm at my hobbit hole, so I guess I'm sheltering in place, but I feel like a coward. And I think I'm about ready to stop. Stop feeling like a coward. Stop hunkering down. I mean, I'm getting to the point where I really don't give two figs. We're all dead men anyway, aren't we? I think that the country has to begin to live. What's really amazing is that people who wanted... There were people in Michigan who said, you know what, Governor Christine Whitmer, whatever your name is, we can't buy garden seeds. We can't. You're telling us we can't buy tomato plants, and we can float in a kayak, but we cannot use a motorized boat. All this nonsensical overreach from big state statists, and they rebelled and they had protests, and there were some people there who were off the wall, and there were others who weren't. And they were all demanding one thing, liberty. They want their country back. What amazed me wasn't that they would do so. What amazed me is the reaction from many in the media, that people who talked about liberty were murderers. Think of that for a second. I understand the need for draconian measures during a virus, and I also understand that perhaps the models that we used of that virus were in error. Maybe we overreacted. Maybe we didn't. But talking about liberty is not a threat. Not talking about liberty is a threat. Because when you stop talking about it, you stop remembering what it was. And to read and to see journalists who pretend that they're iconoclasts because they hate Orange Man bad, lecturing people about how they should not discuss liberty, not stand out there and protest that, hey, I should be able to get in my motorized my bass boat and go fishing, Governor. The whole thing is ridiculous, but it is back to that meeting. It is exactly what Jack Fuller, my friend at the Chicago Tribune, had warned about. People would be afraid to take risks. Now, you can't write without taking risk. Writing a newspaper column is like walking on a high wire every day. And you know you're going to fall. And you keep doing it. Some days you do fall. Some days you survive. The one day I fall and don't survive, well, you'll know about it. It'll say in the paper, John Cass is no longer at the Tribune. Because that's the risk I take every day, professionally. But for my life, I've been hiding in the hobbit hole. And I'm starting to hate my own guts. But I'm not going to condemn people in Michigan or elsewhere for talking about liberty. Because that's the thing about liberty. We give it up too easy. At that meeting, Jack, who was a lawyer, talked about... I didn't take notes, okay? I had two stories to write. I was on deadline. Some nonsensical thing Richie Daley was going to do or say. Something about some corrupt alderman. And I kept looking at my watch, and he said, John Cass... It appears that Mr. Cass is going to supply us with, is going to apply a corrective here. And everyone laughed. Because I was out of my element, you know. With all the people who are good at meetings, I'm not good at meetings. And I just looked at the watch and I said, well, yeah, okay, we've been here a while, but Jack, I've got two stories on deadline. And he said, well, deadline comes first. You wouldn't want to risk missing your deadline. And everyone laughed. And I got up and left and finished my stories on deadline. Most of the people in the room, the future journalists of America, weren't on that kind of daily deadline. They had projects or they were going to have other meetings about other stories they would do. But I've always felt that the daily newspaper is, to me, in a way, in a secular sense, holy, because people can't wait 6 months for you to write a story. They want to read the paper today or tomorrow. And later, about, I don't know, a month later or so, because Jack was a friend, Fuller was a friend. We were fishing on a river up north together. I can't tell you where it was or is. It still is there, and it's still full of trout, and it's still full of steelhead. Two times out of the year, in the fall and the spring, it's full of salmon. We stood there in that river, and he comes up to me after I landed a particularly fine fish on a wet fly, a green steelhead, meaning it had just come up into the water out of the big lake. Into the river, and it was strong as hell. It was like a jet plane. You hook a salmon, and it's like pulling on a tugboat or a tow truck. But a steelhead, that's like a jet plane on the end of your line. And after I landed it, he comes up and smiles. He had a great smile. I think he was smoking a pipe. He had a pipe in his hand, in his teeth, and he fishing hat on. We were in waders, and he was the happiest. He was just truly happy there, you know, as who isn't when you're away from journalism. And he said, great, nice fish. I said, thank you, sir. And he said, you know what? I've been wanting to tell you, you're really no good at meetings, are you? And I said, no, Jack, I guess I'm not. He said, that's good. Good to know. When I became page two columnist of the Chicago Tribune, or page three then, he called me up and said, I knew you weren't good at meetings, and now you don't have to go to them. But I'll always remember what we talked about that day. And then later at the fishing lodge over scotch, good scotch and cigars, we talked about risk and how the culture was about to lose it. What was odd was that the culture didn't want to hear what it was doing and how it could regain that impetus to take risks again. And I think, I could be wrong, and I'm probably going to be denounced by the high priests of the left who hate it when I say Christos Anesti, Christ is risen, but they will tell you in no uncertain terms that you're a murderer if you want to leave your house or tell other people about liberty, and that governors that overreach and step on the Bill of Rights are wrong. Oh, they'll scream then. Because they want you in your cave. They want you in your hole. They want you to hunker down. They want you to be so afraid. And they're the only ones who can save you. You see how this works? You see what's happening, people?
Perhaps curiosity has died. Perhaps even courtesy has died. But I have come a long way, and I would like to know a few things. Why? Well, because I shall return to my time, and my people will ask me questions. Such as, what kind of government rules your world?
We have no government.
Well, you must have a body of men who pass and enforce laws.
Laws? There are no laws.
Where do you get your food and clothing?
No.
Well, you mean you have an economy so well developed that you can spend all your time studying and experimenting, is that right?
You ask many questions.
Well, that is the only way that man has learned and developed. I wish to learn.
This week in the Chicago Way Wayback Machine, I chose a particularly interesting interview, if you ask me, and you are here, so I assume you're asking. I chose an interview under the guise of, where would John Cass go if he could right now? What if it was the only place in the world that was open outside his home and he was able to go? The Windy Kitty Cat Cafe. A couple years ago, John and I talked to noted pet expert Steve Dale and Jenny Tyner, who was hoping at the time to open the Windy City Cat Cafe, which she did. I chose this interview because I think even John would go here if he could right now, seeing as it's probably one of the only places anyone could go. Because if John had to choose between staying home and going to the Windy Kitty Cat Cafe, I'm sure he'd choose to go to the Windy Kitty Cat Cafe, even if it meant he'd have to have his soul sucked by a cat. So here it is from 2017, our interview with Steve Dale and Jenny Tyner of the Windy Kitty Cat Cafe.
Sometimes you just got to get away from reality, okay? So let's talk about a different subject that is near and dear to my heart. Because if there's nothing I like better than was getting a tweet from Jeff Carlin the other day saying, hey, I'm going to have Jenny Tyner on to talk about cats, and Steve Dale, who's the Pet World, Mr. Pet World on WGN, and he's going to talk about cats. Because as Jeff Carlin knows, there's nothing I like better than being around people who've had their souls sucked out of their bodies by the familiars of Satan. Jeff Carlin.
Exactly, John. This is something that I've been working, Steve and I have been scheming about for a couple weeks here. Mm-hmm. And it's right up your alley, Cat Cafe, John. It's going to be the greatest thing ever.
Oh, you know how, you know, at this Cat Cafe, I'm
Wait,
sure
let's
there's
say
going
what
to be,
it is.
Okay, I'll let you and Jenny talk about that.
No, no, Jenny Tyner is the founder of the Windy City Cat Cafe and Lounge.
Yay!
Jenny.
I am.
What is this about?
It's about a place for the community where there's part cafe, part lounge filled with adoptable cats, and that's about it.
So you can eat,
drink.
There? What food do you give offer?
There
your
will
guests?
Be pastries from local eateries. So,
and you okay, can bring treat. Your cat.
You cannot bring your cat. That's the most asked questions. There will be about 10 to 15 adoptable cats from a shelter there all the time.
So you want people to be around cats while they're eating and socializing.
Uh-huh.
Is that it?
Well, let me
drinking.
Let me explain some of this. So this all began. Talk about the history.
Get thee behind me, Steve Dale, and tell me what's going on.
Well, this all began in the Far East. And in Japan and South Korea, they began these little cafes that they opened, and they called them cat cafes. They didn't have, their model was not to have adoptable cats. They just had cats in there walking around, and people would go in there, and you know what? The people were millennials, and you know what millennials do? They put everything on social media. So this became really popular, I mean really popular, on Snapchat and Instagram and Twitter. And it grew and it grew and it grew.
What
it
grew?
Spread.
What the heck grew?
More people coming in.
I want to have a cup of coffee with a cat walking
yes!
around.
Yes! Yes!
No
and,
joke.
And today there are 81 of these places called cat cafes in America. And I am shocked you, John Cass, have not visited all 81. Because this would be your thing. There are tours. You know how people yeah. take architecture tours of certain cities? And they'll hit a city and they'll hit another city and another city. There are now cat cafe tours where they go from city to city to city. John, I would think that you'd
what
be leading one of these.
What are they doing?
They go to the different cat cafes. That's all they do.
And post it on social media.
Yeah.
Cats and coffee, John.
Cats, coffee, T-shirts.
It's a thing. It's
I'm
a
not
huge
some
thing.
Old lady who reads T.S. Eliot and plays piano on with a dusty piano with a cat and do, you know, my yoga, my cat, my
oh, it's
my
funny.
Oolong, they my, actually- my non-caffeine tea, all that other stuff. Ugh.
It's funny you say that
yoga.
Because speaking of yoga.
There will be yoga with cats.
But downward,
it's very popular.
Downward dog
no
is
joke.
Not allowed.
Steve Dale, check you out.
It's very exciting.
You know what's most exciting to me? There are several things that seriously are exciting to me mm-hmm. about this. First of all, second of all, and third of all, we're talking about adopting out more cats.
Because mm-hmm. that's what we need,
yeah.
more cats in the world. Okay.
Oh, gosh, yes.
It's good
yes.
for the economy, John.
Yeah. Well, that too.
Cats, people have to feed cats.
Let's,
at the point, work of to feed their cats.
Point of personal privilege here.
Yes.
Just let the record be known that Steve Dale, Jenny Tyner, and Jeff Carlin are all cat lovers, and they love cats, correct?
Oh, yeah, mm-hmm.
cats.
So let's curb our enthusiasm a little bit.
Well, John, you love rabbits.
Okay, Jenny, where's your cat cafe? Where's the Windy City Cat Cafe?
Well, we're not sure yet, or Jenny isn't sure, so she's scouting locations. In what neighborhood do you think?
Mm-hmm.
As long as it's not mine, it's good. What neighborhood?
Which neighborhood is yours?
I live out in the suburbs, like
okay.
where I belong now.
There's actually people that have written me and requested that I also do one in the suburbs.
Really?
But I won't do it because of you.
No, you're welcome to come. I'm not the king of any. I'm not a Democratic boss. You can open your
But the places we're looking at right now, I've got a few to visit today and tomorrow mm-hmm. For realtors that are interested are Lincoln Park and Ukrainian Village.
I'm surprised.
Are you?
Not Wicker Park? Not Wicker Park?
There are some in Wicker Park that I'm waiting to hear back
okay.
from.
So, and Wrigleyville.
That's so funny.
And also Lakeview.
Yeah.
A major cat
Lakeview
center, as we know.
Another one.
Uh-huh.
Right?
You know, but Jenny was kind of once like you. I just learned
yeah.
today.
Explain. How so, Jenny? Tell me.
So, I didn't like cats. I only like dogs. I was raised in a family with dogs, and I am incredibly allergic to cats. So to be
very
around
much
these
in
cats,
common.
You said Satan or something a minute ago.
Sudafed.
I used to think they were Satan spun. And then I met, I did. Then my boyfriend had a cat. So I got to know the cat. I took Flonase and all
Sudafed.
These different things every day just to
some.
Be around him. And I love him. And then I started rescuing cats. And now I have foster babies. And all, yeah,
how
I'm completely in love with them. I only have one, mm-hmm. but I foster four.
And Jeff has two.
Mm-hmm.
The Tywin Lannister of cats.
One passed away recently.
Really?
So, yes.
And Steve, do you have cats at home?
Yeah, I have one. Two dogs.
What's the name of your... And a fish?
A lizard. What is it?
A lizard. What's the name of your cat, Steve?
Roxy.
And what's the name of your cat, Jenny?
Juice.
And what's the name of your cats?
Tyrion the half cat and Ilsa Penelope cat.
And the foster babies are Titan, Logan, Alaska, and... Another one's Pine Nut, named by.
So we're going to go to the Jenny Tyner Cat Cafe, the Windy City Cat Cafe.
Windy Kitty Cat Cafe.
And what will we have to order? For? Like, I come looking for cats.
A barista on staff to do some fancy drinks, or is it going to be?
There will not be a barista on staff. There will be a separate space that is a cafe. But it will be the person that is kind of in the reception area serving up what they want, or they can do it themselves. And the pastries will all be there. The person will help you get that. So, and then as far as food goes, I went to a cafe in Manhattan, mm-hmm. and what they allowed also was for you to order food from the outside. So that was another kind of cool thing that I thought we could do, is just order from the local businesses. So we'll have a bunch of menus around.
And then they could bring them in.
Right.
What about, a pharmacist for Flonase, Sudafed?
No, I'm going to have a basket at the door with Flonase in it.
Yeah, and then what about an exorcist, like a little exorcist booth?
Hey.
Jenny, I just must tell you that my eyes are already shutting, okay, being around you guys. But my that's why Jeff's behind
that's why
the glass.
I'm behind the glass, yeah, when we do this.
Well, here's what we do know.
Yes.
So you've gone into places like Starbucks, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, well, maybe not you. Most of us
no,
have.
No, I go. Oh, although, I'll give you a hint. You want a cup of coffee and breakfast for $5, you go downstairs to the Billy Goat, you get a huge ham and egg sandwich. Mm. Right, Jeff?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
$5, the whole thing. So it's not like $5 for your coffee.
Cat cafe. Billy Goat Cat Cafe? No? They had a goat down there last year.
There are goat cafes. Did you know that?
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Okay.
So here's what...
I did not know that, Jenny.
Yeah, I didn't either. So here's what we do know about cat cafes, because there are 81 of them in the U.S. So we've seen what they do, and they see the difference that they've made. Chicago has been so slow to jump on board with all this. So you go into a Starbucks, not Billy Goat, this is the case too,
not Starbucks.
Or another, and they're wonderful. Okay, but you go in, you have your cup of coffee, your head is on your phone or on your laptop. Animals, we do know, facilitate social interaction
they
between
do,
people.
Don't they?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We know for a fact that dogs and build community.
That's why when my dog Zeus, the Zeus the Wonder Dog, was a puppy, my sons would walk him. Love to walk him because girls,
oh, they are the best.
It's like the way to meet girls, right?
Well, it turns out at cat cafes, people have met one another. Mm-hmm. They've hooked up.
There's nothing like a latte and, say, like a Madeleine, right? A Madeleine, whatever that, right?
Madeleine. Delicious.
Right, delicious. And you're thinking, and maybe I'll be reading F. Scott Fitzgerald or something, as if
of
I were 19. Back in college, and like the boy in the hotel as big as the Ritz or something, or the rich boy or something like that. And I'm reading this, thinking about the poetry I'm going to write about in my column that rhymes. And all of a sudden, I see two cats in there, and they're doing it.
What?
Are the cats in these places neutered?
Yes.
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 They are all
adoptable
ready. So that means that before
I don't
they
have
come
to
in,
see the whole sex show of cats.
No.
Okay, good.
But there is going to be apparently a movie night, and yep. I don't know what movies Jenny plans on screening here.
Probably cat-themed somehow.
Oh, really? That's a surprise. So, but they will not be X-rated movies, I assume. There you go.
No.
Will the cats be staying there? I mean, are you bringing them? Okay, so it's essentially it's like an adoption service with a cafe that where you can live and or be with the cats.
Yeah,
so I like to call it a big foster home. It's a foster home.
It's homey.
Yep, yeah. It's going
to
be like home.
This is a live rescue specifically that you're going to be working with, correct?
Mm-hmm.
And they will in part take cats from animal care and control.
Right.
So what has happened in other cities is here is another physical outlet and a very comfortable one for people to be in.
Mm-hmm.
And in this case, one that has a nice location. And they are very successful at finding more cats' homes, which I know even you think is a good thing.
So there's one that opened in January this year.
Yeah.
And it's had 300 adoptions. Not here. Sorry. Indianapolis?
Mm-hmm.
300 adoptions.
Really?
No. So it's 7 months. Yeah.
Now, there aren't going to be any feral cats here. These are adoptable cats.
Yeah.
They'll all be, alive.
Alive.
Meet the cats or have the cats there, assess them. Are they good for the public? If they're not, they'll probably stay.
And Jenny also is going to take some cats because one facility in Chicago was doing this. It seems they're not anymore. So you'll periodically take some cats with special needs.
Mm-hmm.
So cats with hyperplasia syndrome, cats that act dizzy all the time.
Yeah.
They have a neurological issue. But as far as we can tell, they feel okay. Mm-hmm. Some of them, as kittens, as they age, actually grow out of this. They just have to be kept safe so they don't fall downstairs kind of thing.
Themselves.
Yeah, yeah. A cat maybe with three legs, cat with half a tail missing, those sorts of things. That other shelters, other shelters may not take them.
Mm-hmm.
Why, even if they are slow to adopt out, they've got a wonderful homey atmosphere to be in, and certainly a lot of people around.
Jenny, when people are sitting around having their lattes with strange cats, do they tend to, if they love cats, they might adopt them, right?
Exactly. That's the hope.
Because they'll see them, walking around, or will they be in cages?
So it's a cage-free environment. So they'll be walking around and people can, there's going to be toys everywhere so they can play with the cats. They, if they're sleeping, snuggle up next to them and just kind of pet them. It's going to be just like home.
And
really,
it is soothing to pet an animal, is it not, Jeff?
Yeah, like when they start
to
purring.
Pet a cat?
Sure.
Oh, man, come on. If I need to relax and my cat starts purring and I'm petting, oh my gosh, it's just so calming, which is another thing, people coming in after work. Something like that.
Like, I could see someone stressed, right,
yeah,
Steve?
Yeah.
And they want to take a nap. They have their little, what's the coffee or the tea that makes you sleep?
Sleepy time tea.
Sleepy time tea. And then I grab a cat by the scruff of its neck and I hope not. Or I ask it, because you have to speak to it in a language or something of catness.
Yes.
And then I say, please, cat, in this strange language, please sit on my chest.
Uh-huh.
While I sleep, and then you can purr, and that kind of is soothing, right?
Sure. It is.
To some people, right?
Sure.
I think you were touching on that a minute ago.
Aren't I being nice, Jeff? Jeff's looking at me
very nice.
Right?
You're being so sweet.
I think we've sold you on this. Clearly, we're going to have...
You're going to come in, right? On me. I'm going to give you the flow name.
You know what I think?
In the door.
I think you ought to
name... I seriously cannot open my eyes thinking about this.
I'm so excited. You ought to name, Cass's Corner, and there'll be a scratching post.
There you go.
Thank you.
Yes.
I could use it myself.
After some days here, I bet
itch,
you could.
You know, right?
Yeah.
And so pastries, who's going to make the pastries? Jenny, you?
Well, one place that I really want is Molly's Cupcakes. Everything has to come prepackaged, though. There can be no open food. So we're just going to talk to a lot of local bakeries. It ultimately depends on the final location. I'm going to kind of look at who's around and who can supply this locally.
Okay, that's very interesting. And I think it's great that you can do that, that you want to help cats and help
support
cat
the local
people.
Economy.
Yeah. And I also like the idea of dog cafes.
There are some.
That would be nice, and
there are some, right?
Yeah.
But I just want a list of them so that I don't go.
What?
Because if I go to a dog cafe, I'm going to order the veal. Can I have some veal, salt, and vodka? And then I see a dog lifting its leg in the room across the, on the wicker outside furniture. I'm like out of there, okay? I'm not going to go eat where dogs are eating. I don't even like Zeus the Wonder Dog looking at me when I'm eating.
Well, you know what we do
have
now?
You know what I say to him?
What do you say?
Get back. I just say it in that tone, and he gets back, because I cannot stand a dog looking me in the eye while I'm carving into a good porterhouse steak. And what do you say about that, Steve?
Well, here's
what
I say.
And what about cats begging? Do cats beg, too?
Sure.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, they can, yeah. But several questions all here at once. So first of all, what I love, you've got it now, and this is the kind of place, if I know John Cass, he's going into. There are dozens of bars in Chicago that don't serve food. Some of them you can order in pizza from the place down the street, and dogs are welcome in the bar. You know, years ago, I was testifying in front of city council, and you know how much fun that is.
Did I cover that?
And I was talking about the idea of dogs dining outside. And finally, we officially made it legal, because what happened back in the day, this is true, what happened is, I mean, for years, people would do it, restaurants would do it, and then Mayor Daley at the time would say, we need to send out our investigators, our licensed people, because we need to find people. And in fact, when you read the city code at the time, I'm getting off the topic, but when you read the city code at the time, it said something like, it was so antiquated, that no animals, particularly chickens, could be outside. I mean, it was written in the 1800s. So we wanted to update all that. So I testified in front of city council, and the aldermen were questioning me, and they said, well, how healthy is it for food to be outside and dogs to be outside? And I asked, I said, how many of you have a dog? And most everybody raised their hand. I said, how many of you, be honest with me, eat in your kitchen and the dog is in the kitchen at the same time?
Mm-hmm.
And as many people raised their hand. And I said, you know what the real concern is, if we're talking about health concerns, which they said they were? I said, the real concern is you've got to find a way to put diapers on birds, because we've been eating outside for a very long time as human beings, and that is where potentially an infectious problem can come from. You're all still here, and I'm still here.
Jeff, diapers on birds or cats can take care of the birds.
There you go.
Right?
Okay.
Yes.
As
no,
a matter of fact, I have a bunny issue.
Oh, I went down the wrong road.
And I'm wondering, can I borrow some of your cats? I don't want them in my house. But if I stake them on each corner, on like little... Yeah, stake them, like with a chain, like, or maybe like a chest. I don't want to get
harness.
I don't want to get in there.
Thank you, Jeff.
Make them choke, because they have to be able to eat. And then stake them on little silver chains. Very nice. Very, you know.
Elegant.
Elegant.
Yes.
So they could reach all around not get into my vegetables, but around them. Would they do a job on the rabbits?
Oh, for sure.
Hmm?
Yeah. Why do you want that?
I think the dogs might do it quicker than cats, right?
Yeah, my dog, when he doesn't eat, like Betty says, he's not eating.
My
and
dog
then we
loves
know.
Squirrels.
Yeah. Then we know. You know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want Steve Daley to even look at me. I'm not even looking at Steve Daley.
It's true.
You know what?
Steve Daley will be looking at me. I'm covering my eye to protect my face from Steve.
But Steve Daley knows what a huge dog lover you really are.
That's right. And
they're
they
sweet.
Need protein to live.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just saying.
But you know what? Not as much protein as one would think. So those TV commercials, that we see about bringing out the wolf in your dog are absolutely silly. Dogs' nutritional needs are actually more like ours than they are like wolves.
Oh, good. So I hope they like baklava and a cigarette with some coffee. In the meantime, Jenny Tyner, founder of Windy City Cat Cafe. Windy Kitty with a K, Cat Cafe. How could people find out more about your Cat Cafe, which is about to be given birth? Not one, but maybe just one now, right? You're only going to have one.
Right, just right now.
And
there's
then
going
eight
to be
later.
One.
But
yep.
Right now, one.
Well, you can find us at WindyKittyChicago.com. Or on Facebook or Instagram at Windy Kitty Cat Cafe.
And Steve Dale, where can people find you when you're not staring at them in anger because they might have said something wrong about cats or pets?
You know what,
I'm covering
John,
my eyes.
You cannot help it. I just love you. In fact, I love you so much that I've got something for you. Now, last time I was in the studio, I brought in catnip, and we saw
John Cass roll
around in a way we never have before.
Oh, yes. Yeah,
this time...
Come here, let me kiss your ear now.
No
Maybe
way.
Not.
Here.
Aw. Oh. What is that?
Oh, for Zeus?
Is that a Kong?
Yeah.
It's a Kong...
That floats.
Wubba. It's got two long ears, so it suggests a rabbit?
Actually, as it turns out, who knew?
That's awesome.
And it squeaks. Your dog will, Zeus will love it.
It's training
Jouet
for when you
parfait
put
him. Pour tirier et lancer.
Gracias.
Right?
What did he say?
Some French thing. It's a French rabbit. Here you go, Jenny. That's take a look cute. At that. Do cats like to play with these toys?
Not these toys.
Not that's a bit big for a cat. But
okay, as far as I'm concerned, I'm really glad you both came in because I want people to know more about cat cafes and Jenny Tyner's Windy Kitty Cafe again at
WindyKittyChicago.com.
Right, and Steve Dale because he's always good with pets. Although he hated my idea of having terrier rat fights. In the alley so we could bet on them, because I still think it's a good deal.
I'm still not so sure.
Yeah. So if you want to know more about that. But understand, as far as I'm concerned, I will never, ever set foot in your place. But I still respect you and love you for coming on. Jeff,
thank
don't
you.
Look
we
at me like
too.
That. I can't go into a cat cafe.
I wouldn't expect you to, John.
All we're right. going to get one of those frequent visitor cards, right?
Mm-hmm.
And every time you come in, you get points on it?
If you fall asleep, everybody listen to me. If you fall, it's happened to me with two Persians. They almost got me, my grandmother's big, fat Persian black cats.
Mm-hmm.
They'll come up on a baby when it's sleeping, get into the crib,
oh, come on.
And sit on its chest. And try to suck the soul out of its body.
You don't really believe
That's
that.
That's what happened.
No.
She had to take a broom handle. She chased. I heard the crack.
No.
It scared the crap out of me.
He is making that
What
up.
Are you talking about?
Do you know where that comes from?
No, I don't want to have your rational. I'm saying they suck
yeah, you
your soul out of
you don't want me to be rational. That's right.
They don't. Jenny, tell me this is not true. Is
it's
it true?
Not true.
How, why? Cat propagandists are telling me it doesn't exist.
That they'll suck the soul out of babies?
There isn't one instance.
Yes, or humans if you're
oh
just sleeping.
Oh, my gosh. No. When you get a cat no. and it looks you straight in the eye and it's like,
here's
you.
What happens.
No, they love
And
they,
then, you know what happens?
So
and then
sweet.
He looks at you and say if it's name. What's
oh
the name of this hypothetical cat that you just, a
Logan.
Black one? What?
Logan.
And then about two days later, Steve Dale and Jenny Tyner are running around the kitchen going, Logan, we're your servants too. Logan, we're your servants. I saw that movie, man. It's with the goat. Jenny Tyner, Steve
Hello.
Dale, thanks so much for joining us. I'm not as anti-cat as I would like you to believe. Mm. I'm just a little afraid. But I offer myself up. To always experience new things.
I can hold your hand in there.
Thank you, Jenny.
Right
as long as I can wear a gigantic rubber hazmat suit, I'll be fine. Thank you very much for coming today, guys.
You're great. Thank you, John.
So here we are. Me in my hobbit hole. Jeff at WGN. You wherever you are. Listening to this talk about risk and coronavirus. I want to thank you for being here with us and enduring this. And I really can't wait to see Jeff. Even if it's by Zoom or whatever technological magic he dreams up. I miss you, Jeff. And I miss all of you. And I miss the world of men and women. And I think it might be time for me to get out of the hobbit hole. Maybe I'll wear a mask, but maybe I won't. I won't cough on you. I think it's time we start thinking. What about risk? What is it? And why have we lost the idea of taking risks? Remember, find us on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, Spotify. Look at the bottom of every column I write online. It's right there, the link. All you have to do is click on it. And we put it on Facebook, both Facebook pages, the John Cass friend page and the John Cass fan page. I do that. Jeff tweets it out too. Just, it's spring. Grass is up. I see dandelions in front of the Hobbit abode next door. So I know it's spring. And it's Easter. And there was no lamb turning this year, but maybe next year. And maybe some ribs on the 4th of July and a picnic. You know? Remember that country? 4th of July? Independence? Remember those people? They lived in this sea. You know, there was a sea on one side and a sea on the other. Sea to shining sea. They took risks. Their whole life was about risk. Moving westward, and all the immigrants coming here with $5 in their pocket, or in my dad's case, $15 in his pocket. They risked everything. Even coming here during, before and after the pandemic of 1918. They risked going to the moon. They risked not winning the trophy. They risked competing without winning, without being assured that they'd win a trophy. Isn't that amazing? Who were those people? Someday there'll be a movie about some old man who's probably about 40, having survived, either wasn't turned into crackers or for the young, or survived because of antibodies, and he'll be sitting around a campfire telling the young about this place. Sea on one side, an ocean on one side, and an ocean on the other. And the amazing people who lived there, and they all took risks. Every day. For Jeff Carlin, WGN producer of the Rokan Show, and for me, John Cass, husband, father, columnist for the Chicago Tribune and a member of its editorial board, and whoever Jeff found on the Wayback Machine, thanks for being here on the Chicago Way on WGN Plus.